G7, number 4B.
We go to a next subject still in that first block and turn to our study material to page 2. You just open at page 2 and we take the subject of scientific obstetrics as given text-wise in the textbook. And we will consider this paragraph on scientific obstetrics a bit closer. Why do I take this text? Well, because it is dealing with the birth of the idea of science. It is not dealing with the birth of a baby, of a human baby. It is the birth of the idea of science. That's our subject. How can science be born over and over on an even higher and higher level? And we know this subject pretty well. Anyway, most of the students who are sitting here have been considering this paragraph over and over, and we are well aware of its content and of its impact as far as we have seen what, namely, that this paragraph follows the word order. The word order you have on the right-hand side on this page 2, and we will read it together, not very deeply go into it, but just read it to find the main tone in it so that we can afterwards go further than that. We don't read what is in italics here. That's my contribution. We want first to read what Mrs. Eddy had to say about it and see if we can see the deep structure of it. The text is, so to say, the surface structure, and now we want to see the deep structure of it, and the deep structure of it, as printed out on the right-hand side, is actually showing the birth of the idea of science through the consciousness of the world order, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. We read together the text. I just make a few remarks. Teacher and student should also be familiar with the obstetrics taught by this science. So we have here the very first step that is asked for bringing forth a new idea, the idea of science, namely that we have to be familiar with. Familiar with means to be of one mind, to have the same mind, to be of the same opinion, so to say, of the same reasoning level. So you get the sense of mind as a deep structure. We cannot give birth to the idea of science without that we have the mind of Christ. We must have God's mind as our mind. So we begin by seeing that we have to start with the divine mind, with the one mind, that we have to be one with that mind, be familiar with that mind, therefore within ourselves really to have a connection, a correlation of our thought with that divine mind, that we are not trying to reason out things from the human mind or from the mortal mind, but that we let the divine mind speak to us so that we hear the divine mind speaking to us, so that we don't interfere with the mind's own speaking. If we have that attitude, we can go to the second sentence, to attend properly the birth of the new child. So it needs attending it, the birth of the new child or divine idea. What is the further requirement? The further requirement is you should so detach mortal thought from its material conceptions. That's one of the most important points in our treatment. Can we really truly say that we detach mortal thought from its material conception. That's always the difficult point. Can we detach our thought from looking at the disease, from feeling disease, from talking about the disease, from inwardly talking with the disease? Can we detach thought that it has something to do with the body, that it has something to do with me, with a person, with a mortal? Can we detach mortal thought from the material conception that there is a medical law about it, that the medical law says this and that about it? Can we really detach mortal thought from all material conception? Can we do that? This is quite a struggle sometimes, not only sometimes, practically every time, to really lose the material conception, to lose the material image of the proposition of the problem, and give no thought at all anymore to the problem. We know very well, I think everybody does that, that one is constantly having quite a talk and a chit-chat with the problem. When we are alone, when we go to bed, when we wake up and during the day, we chit-chat with the problem and say, when I do this, or should I do that, or what should I think, what should I not think, and so on, what should I deny, what should I affirm, you see? You chit-chat constantly. It's a yakety-yakety going on with the problem, and this spirit says, make a line of demarcation. Separate the human conception from the divine. Separate it. Put it, what Dolly used to say, put it behind you into the corner and don't look at it anymore, and turn around and look into the immensity and infinity of the divine mind. That's the second step, spirit that separates. Can you feel that that this obstetrics, the birth of the idea of science, begins somehow within us by preparing our consciousness so that consciousness is ready to receive really a revelation, so that we don't interfere with our thinking, with our opinions, with our conceptions? There is no interference that should come up. Let mind do what mind wants to do. And if we do that and separate it, we have made the second step. Then comes the third step, that the birth will be natural and safe. You see, then it is natural and then it is safe, when we don't interfere. So we have the safety of soul, the naturalness of soul, the identity of soul, and so the problem gathers its own identity. The idea behind the problem gathers its own identity. Then, at that point, we have a change. We, up to this point, it is describing our attitude towards. Now, what follows is no more of that nature. Then, when that appears, we come to the next sentence. Though gathering new energy, this idea, can you see, now it's no more our conception, no more our attitude, it's now the idea that does something. The idea takes over, so to say. We are over the hump, over the 3.5, we come to the 4, and the idea is now governing, and so it says here, though gathering new energy, this idea cannot injure its useful surroundings in the travail of spiritual birth. So it cannot injure anything. It's a principle governs so that it has only, that it brings forth only harmony and harmonious results. So we don't have to fear such an attitude. You see, it takes sometimes quite a bit of courage to say, I put away all my material conceptions, all my material thinking and opinion and wishes and desires, and put it that right away. And to have the courage to say, Christ, you are responsible for the whole situation. The Christ idea knows what to do, knows when to do, what to do, where to do, and so on, knows everything. I must give the idea a chance to operate. Principle. The idea begins as the idea of principle to operate. And when we do that, here and there comes in then perhaps a little bit of anxiety or fear, which says, but will the idea really do it? Or will the idea be in time? Will the idea really do it at the right time? Will it not be too late? And so on. Will it be strong enough? Will it be powerful enough? Doesn't the idea need my support? Things like this come in and in, over and over. It's always that one has to have what the Bible says, faith in it. Huh? Absolute trust in it. Not blind faith, but absolute trust in the idea, and say, I trust the idea, though I cannot, humanly, I cannot see how it will work. We don't know how principle will work. What we had the other day, we must see principle's proof. We must see the proof of principle. And we don't know how it will work out. We have the faintest idea. And it is the lesser we try to figure it out, the better for us. The better for us. Then we give really the idea a chance. So it cannot harm us. Nothing can go wrong because we trust principle. So it will not injure its useful surroundings. It doesn't say that it will not injure the unuseful surroundings. It will injure the unuseful surroundings. It will bring forth a crisis. It will bring forth a chemicalization. It will turn over and overturn and overturn and overturn until it comes whose right it is. But the useful surrounding will not be touched. This is an enormous trust we can have. Yes? Then it goes on to a next step, to life. We can see that. A spiritual idea. See, it's still a spiritual idea. The idea is at work. It's no more what we have to do. The spiritual idea has not a single element of error. And this truth removes properly whatever is offensive. So we get really the Christ power at work as life that does away with all that is standing in the way. All that seems to oppose it and be a hindrance for the demonstration of it. It will deal with this. The life power will just wipe away all that stands in the way. It is the life is that breakthrough that nothing can stop. Yes? So it's the idea that does it, not we. We don't have to fight for that. Can you see the trust we must have in the right idea? Then we come to another point, to truth. The new idea, again you have the idea, the new idea conceived and born of truth and love. Now it's born of truth and love, it's not born of our conceptions, but of truth and love, is clad in white garment. White stands for purity. White is purity. It's clad in purity, there is no more error there, as we have seen. Its beginning will be meek, very meek. It is mostly as meek that we don't even feel it, that something is happening, that we are not even aware that already something has begun to move. So it's so meek, so tender, that perhaps only after months or sometimes after years, we can say, oh yes, now looking back, there, half a year ago, I began to see that, that, or I had this and this experience, and there it began. Only in retrospect, very often, mostly in retrospect, we begin to see where the idea began, where the idea was born. We are not aware, usually, right at the moment when the new idea is being born, that we are aware of it, that it is being born. It's so meek. It's really in the stable, huh? Where nobody sees it, nobody takes notice of it, no hullabaloo about it. Huh? It's so meek. But its growth, as we tend it and we love it and mother it, its growth is sturdy. Suddenly one feels that idea that was hardly noticed within our consciousness, that suddenly it gathers strength. It becomes so dominant within ourselves, so pushing, I would say, in ourselves, so strong that it pushes us and we can't say anymore, oh, let me go away. It takes us and says, I push you forward, you can't stop it. It's sturdy, and its maturity is undecaying. It's eternal. A right idea from God has the eternality of God, and therefore we work for eternity. Whatever we give birth to as a right idea is a birth for eternity. It's grand. It's glorious. Then comes even the last point of love. When this new birth takes place, the Christian Science infant is born of the Spirit, capitalized Spirit, born of God. See, then we know that not we have given birth to the idea. At that moment then we really begin to sense, I didn't do anything. It just came to me. It just happened to me. It was a let there be. God said, let there be. And it's really born of God. It's born of truth and love. And it gives us a sense that it has come from God and not from us. So that we are never the big guy. We are never the giant. It's always God that has been moving and has moved our mentality and our consciousness and has moved it to the point where it begins to be transparent for the light. And can cause, therefore, the mother no more suffering. It can give us no more suffering. We see then the glory of it. Up to this point, as we have seen, it can really destroy the unuseful surroundings. It can go through crisis, through doubts and fears, and I don't know what. It's the life of a pioneer, the life of an adventurer. And that is never without any danger, never without any crisis. It's quite a job. But at the end, when we are through it, we have gone through it, we come out on the other end of the tunnel and there will be light. And then we know that this idea has been born of God and can cause the mother no more suffering. By this we know that truth is here. The truth is here. Can you see something here? Up to this point, it was a process. It was a process of giving birth. Now it's being. And we have to be very clear about these two terms, about these two aspects. Namely, the becoming aspect of in Christian Science and the being aspect in Christian Science. There is a lot of becoming aspects in Christian Science, just like the 7 days of creation are a becoming aspect. First the first day, then the second day, then the third day. You see, little by little you build up and up and up until finally the creation is finished and God rested. Then you have the being aspect of it. And these two aspects was always taken in consideration when we have to do with the development of an idea. that we don't mistake them and mix them up, because the absolutists are always in danger of only stressing the being aspect of Christian Science. They don't want to hear anything about the becoming aspect of Christian Science. Do you understand me when I say the becoming aspect? Is that the right wording, phrasing? Yes? So, therefore, you see, Mrs. Eddy calls it also like this. She calls it days of creation, the becoming aspect, which she says are actually the numerals of infinity. Numerals of infinity are the being aspect. It's not the becoming aspect. So at the end of the 7 days of creation, she brings that in and says, look here, you must consider both aspects. Yeah, so that we know the truth is here and has fulfilled its perfect work. Yes. Now, this is what we have studied over years and years, and what was, so to say, the what you call it, the ground on which really Dorley's work was growing up, the ground in which the seed of science was sown and was growing up. And therefore, Dorley was at the beginning always going over this obstetrics. Not only at the beginning, but every time he opened a summer school or a lecture or anything like that, he couldn't help but bring in obstetrics. He knew that this is a very important subject. Now, we have seen that this wonderful development, how the idea of science comes into being, that this develops according to the 7 synonymous terms in the word order. On the sheet, on the page that we have in front of us, page 2, I inserted 2 other categories or 2 other connotations. The one is on the left-hand side, namely the 4, the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and Science, which will mean what? Which means that we can never separate the 7 from the 4. That the 4 are really the dynamic moving power which operates in the 7 in order that 7 are a becoming order. Something has to move mind to spirit. Why should we go from spirit to soul? Because there is a moving spirit there, namely the 4 side of the holy city, the dynamic power. And so we can see that intertwined into the 7 are the 4. There is not one being that is split up in 3 parts, in a part of the 7 and a part of the 4 sides of the city, and then in the 3rd part, the 4 levels. But they are all intertwined, and it's only a matter of seeing how they are intertwined, how they are connected together, how they form a whole network of ideas that work together. So that every point of intersection, when you change that, you change the whole. It's like in a spider web. That's a symbol for it. If you change one point in a spider net, the whole spider net changes, moves. Yes. That's perhaps a symbol here. So what do we see here? And this is now the result that we have to keep in mind, which runs now through the whole week. In the Word, what was the first movement of the Word? Namely, that on those first 3 synonyms, we had a common denominator, namely that thought was, so to say, evolving to the point of idea. We had thought to attend properly, that's a thought process. We had to distinguish between mortal thought and spiritual thought, so that we had the distinction of spirit, and finally We had in the fifth, then the crystallization in thought, so that it became secure, that it became safe, that it really gathered identity in our thought. So it's all about what I have here tried to explain in an epitome. Epitomes can always be changed, but the tonality should be somehow right. In italics I have written, from pure thought to ideas. That's the first great step in the evolution of the self-unfoldment of science. Then, in the Christ, we have seen that then suddenly the idea enters into the focus of contemplation. No more thought. There was no more anything about attitude and thought, but the idea, and showed the power of the idea which deals with error, which excludes error. So we have the Christ sense in it. Can you hear the Christ sense? The Christ is always that which is the truth, and the truth deals as a savior, saves us from the opposite of truth, from error. Then we came to a next part, the Christianity, which I epitomized as the bigness of the idea. It's not enough to see that thought evolves into idea, and that idea has power. Let's also see that that idea is really the idea of God. Not our idea. Not an isolated entity called idea. But that idea is always the idea of God. And that's another thing that I want to stress. That we speak a lot about idea and ideas as if they were entities by themselves. An idea is always an idea of God. Meaning that we should always close an idea with the whole of God. So that the idea always reflects the whole of God. And not just the idea of mind is the idea of mind. The idea of mind is the idea of mind characterized by mind. But reflecting spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. Yes. Then finally, when you have seen the bigness of the idea, you go a step further. As I have said, that the synonym for God alone is being. You, so to say, drop the concept of idea, and you see that actually the synonyms for God are the only being there is. That's being capitalized, being. So that we come from the ideas way back again and put it right back from where ideas actually come, namely from the seventh in onwards term. And therefore from that point on we can talk the language of the capitalized terms, the language of spirit. Yes, we have to stop here.